see it, there are several important things which remain most foremost in my mind. And the reason I'm going to speak of, not to give you detail or word for word of what the report consisted of. And the first thing that comes to mind in this subject is, as we were talking with Peter and Charles a moment ago about a Dr. Ken Houston, who in fact saw something at the time of the Sputnik at a place called Waimea, where he was stationed in New Guinea in 1959. The Russian satellite should have been going in one direction, and he saw it going in the opposite direction. And he theorized, rightly so, I guess, at the dinner table the following day, that it must have been a flying saucer. And this is the first occasion which I'd ever heard anybody refer to flying saucers as such. There was a gathering about the size of this tonight, all sitting around the table, and then the subject got off the flying saucers, and of course nobody but Dr. Ken Houston really believed that they existed. Sometime after this, and I say sometime, it was a matter of months, I was coming back from a three-week walkabout. Walkabout is a patrol, and it was my job at that particular time in 1959 to be an inspector of schools. There were 12 schools in a very large district, some of them up in the old Stanley Ranges, and it was my job to go around and check on them, and as an inspector might do. And then on my way back, the normal thing was to get a whaleboat, have a whaleboat waiting for me at a particular spot, and to row back along the coast. And it was on this particular night, as I was drawing in to my home station, somewhere between 7 and 8, I looked across towards the mountains, the mountain range, a mountain which I knew very well. And there I saw what I thought was a Tilly lamp. A Tilly lamp is a pressure paraffin lamp, and at a distance it sparkles, rather like the magnesium children's playthings. They are what do you call them? Sparkles. Oh, yeah, rather like this in effect, except that it's round. And I took it to be a Tilly lamp, and it was only afterwards that I thought maybe it was not. In fact, I thought that it could not have been. Because on this particular mountain, which is something over 2,000 feet high, it is rather desolate. And certainly there are no gardens there. Certainly nobody in his right mind would be up there without a particular reason, such as being a member of a geographical society or something like this, of this description. And certainly nobody would be up there at night with a Tilly lamp. Now these thoughts pass through my mind as I gaze up to this light from the sea. But still, it was far from the subject of flying saucers. And so I accepted that there was just somebody stupid enough to be there. When I arrived home, however, again, I was rather remote from the subject because I was not well informed, neither was I really interested in the subject of UFOs. But when I arrived home, one of my head teachers, native Papuan teachers, by the name of Stephen Moy Gill, which might sound rather suspicious, he came to me and said, "Last Sunday night I saw a rather strange thing. You know all there is to know about strange things. You tell me what it is." And then he described, and I've written this down in a letter that I wrote to a friend of mine, David Dewey, who was the head and principal of the St. Aidan's Teachers College. He described an object over the sea. And I asked him all kinds of questions about it, its size, its shape. Was it like a sixpence? Was it like a plate? And each time he came back, he said, "No, it was like a saucer. This is the nearest thing that I can that I can relate it to." And I'm assuming that at least there are a few people here who have read that letter. If you haven't, Mr. Bowen here will surely let you have a copy of it to see. And it was from then then that I became rather curious. And remember how I signed that to David Dewey, who later on, by the way, was able to sign another statement that he and his wife had seen the flying saucer. But before this, of course, he was interested academically, but not totally convinced. And what did I assign myself as?
Doubting Bill.
That's right. Yes. Doubting Bill. Now, you see, with this signature, this is going back in retrospect, in this signature, there was somehow or other forming in my mind the possibility of these things. The integrity, in my mind, of Stephen Moy could never be doubted. I had extreme trust and faith in him as a character and as an honest person. And Frederick and I were mentioning just a short time ago about, in fact, the significance and the importance of having doubts, a scientist having doubts, and how this can lead then to research and investigation. So I guess I must have been at this kind of stage. And then, of course, before I sent the letter off, then the actual sightings of mine occurred. Now, not talking about actual incidents or why it was how it was recorded, but the few things that stand most and foremost in my mind. This is going back now 11 and a half years, and there are some things which are tremendously vivid. I'll mention them. The lights that I mentioned before, that seemed like two lamps, this remains most vivid, and a vivid pictorial impression in my mind. An outline of the saucer, separated portion, or a dark portion between it and this sparkling light. So there's a light outline, darkness, and the object itself. That is most vivid. Another most vivid thing is the shaft of blue electric light emanating from the top of the craft up towards the heavens. An electric blue light, rather, I think I described it as a pencil with light. Another very vivid impression remains there, without any doubts at all, but in my own mind, in any case, that I saw it, and that is the waving men. I saw Amy Michelle on Saturday. He said, you know, there was a character also who saw somebody wave. And I said, well, that's me. He said, oh, that's you. So he became even more interested. But this, in fact, is one thing which I just can't count wipe out of my mind, that something that looked human waved in this apparent response to waves of wave that we gave. Outside of the report itself, there were one or two incidents which I recorded because I felt that it was going to be a reasonable report, that they should be entered, although I didn't attach any theories about whether they were connected with the event of the sighting or not. One was this ear-splitting sound, noise, like a gun report, I guess, or something which in any case had been out of my experience before. That evening, it was overcast, and I was inside, and then there was this great noise. I looked out the window, could see nothing. Some people have asked me whether I smelled anything. I don't recall smelling anything either. But that's a noise which will always remain with me. The other one was also a noise, and that was, again, after sighting, and that was the noise of as though something had been dropped from a great height, some metallic substance, I guess, being dropped from a great height onto the galvanized iron roof of one of the, well, in fact, of a partition of the building I was in. So convinced I was that something had been dropped that I got somebody to climb up the next morning to examine the roof. And nobody could find any article, nobody could find any dent. What that was, whether it was connected with the events of the night, I have no idea. But I wrote those down, as a supplement or agenda, rather than part of the report itself. But why did I report this thing? Why didn't I just stand and look and tell the story afterwards? Well, this, I suppose, was the fact that I'd been doing some a bit of journalistic work, and also that I'd been doing some other study, and I was in the habit of carrying paper and pencil for this very thing. And I suppose when I first saw this object and had distinguished it from Venus, because it was in virtually in the same direction, that I thought, well, now, this is what I've been waiting for. I guess I thought this. This is what I've been waiting for. This is the sort of thing that nobody will believe unless I write it down. In fact, I won't believe it unless I write it down either, because you know how it is, especially in the tropics. I didn't have any whiskey on board, but you never know that people might or might not believe that. And I wrote this down, minute by minute. Whenever anything happened, I put it down. And it was just as simple as that. I had a rather academic approach to it. I was not excited. Not that I remember. Certainly I was, had a calm enough mind to be able to record the events without any trouble. I wonder, too, if the reason for the sane, well, rather sane behaviour on the part of the natives was because I treated it as a reasonable sort of thing rather than becoming agitated. And I believe that had I become terribly excited, they would have become terribly excited too. Had I been in fear, they would have been. I feel that they were watching me for a lead, because it was out of their experience. I asked them afterwards, had they ever seen anything like this before? Stephen Moyer, of course, had. A different kind of thing. But he was the only one, really, who was possibly more interested in it than I would have imagined. Well, this is a brief outline of just sort of a reminiscing. And I feel that you know as much about these sightings as I do myself by now. They've been passed from person to person. I was in Birmingham a week ago, picked up a book on UFOs. I was rather surprised to find there. I can't tell you what the title was now, but I think it was selling for about 5 and 6 pence. And what I saw and how I saw it and the reason for my seeing it, I'd be ashamed to tell you. But there it was. This is not the first occasion, of course, I've seen things like this. But apart from that sort of thing, you know the kind of, you know what it's been, I feel, is that right? Everybody's familiar with what I wrote in those days. And
well, if they're not, they soon will be.
Soon will be.
Going to publish it.
I'm very happy to make clear any other little points perhaps that people might be interested in.
Yes. Well, thank you very much indeed. Would they like to ask?
I have a question, Mr. Chairman. When you saw this thing and looked at it, and I appreciate this could only be a subjective impression if you had it at all, did you have an impression of being observed?
No, I didn't. You're going to be civil, sir.
Everybody
can hear me.
Very
important. No, you didn't. Thank you very much.
Well, I tell you why. Because it seemed as though the people on the craft, let's assume there are people, and we've got to start somewhere, were more interested in what they were doing on the craft than in us. This was the impression we got.
May I just supplement that question by saying, perhaps I misunderstood or do not be sufficiently attentive, but I gathered that you had said earlier that you were aware of somebody waving to you, so it looked as though you were observed.
Yes, but there's a measure of definition of observation.
Yes.
I think in my report you will see that they waved and then they carried on with, seemed to carry on with whatever the business was.
They, how many?
We fought four.
Four waved?
Not once, no. There were four, it seems as though there were four beings.
All waved in turn. Yes,
this
one was
one. They didn't
wait.
Not they altogether, no.
Well, how many people observed?
37, was it 35 or 37?
38, how many actual sightings were there?
Two nights which we could really be certain about.
There's more witnesses the first night.
Yes, that's right. David Dewey, the man I mentioned at the Teachers' College, was my first correspondent. And I asked him, actually, Norman Crutwell, Canon Norman Crutwell, was on patrol at that particular time. And I mentioned to David Dewey, asking him whether he thought it would be worth, or whether Norman Crutwell would be interested, because Norman Crutwell had been an unofficial chronicler of sightings that had been going on in around New Guinea for months. He had been keeping records of people who had been coming in from all kinds of places, up in the hills and along the coast and on boats. Such recordings as moons exploding, this kind of thing. I just don't remember how many there were, but there were quite a number of them. And so I mentioned today to David, did he think Norman would be interested? I sent a copy over to Norman. Norman then sent it on to Brisbane, and the Brisbane people gave it to the papers. That's how it came out.
Could I ask a question? We've read a lot in recent years about rather popular accounts of the cargo cult among the people of New Guinea. Now, I'm curious to know whether any of your native people there at the mission, whether any of them were inclined to interpret it in terms of that.
Not where I was. They were rather more sophisticated. Not that we, I suppose that's the wrong word to use, because there are quite a number of sophisticated people who still believe in the cargo cult. But it's not that particular area. The wrong area.
A supplementary question to that one has just been asked. You did say earlier that there was one man in whom you had complete confidence, who had previous experiences.
Yes.
He was a Papuan, yes. And but in whom you had complete trust, of his integrity and trust.
Yes.
Are you aware that he was all psychic? I mean, did he have visions, or did he have means of communication with discarnate beings, or had he ever interested you at all in the psychic field?
Neither before nor since.
Neither before nor since.
No.
So you're not aware that he was
the suicide? No. This was the only, to my knowledge, he was
one of... I wonder what made you feel that he was completely reliable in this field?
No. Completely trustworthy in...
As an observer?
No. As a person, a person whose statements I had no reason to doubt. He's neither before nor since has he ever communicated with me that he's seen or heard anything that's not
aversive. Were you able to estimate roughly the distance?
No, I wasn't.
Away from you after the object when you sighted it either the first or the second time?
No. At the time, as I remember it, there was no reason to wave other than just to wave because this thing was there and there seemed to be people on.
And I mean, was it a matter of miles or of hundreds of yards? Could you get as near as that?
No, feet. Hundreds of feet.
Hundreds of feet?
Yes.
It was dark.
Not in the beginning. It was dusk. And then, of course, went into darkness, yes.
And was it self-illuminant?
Yes.
So it really was saw it by its own light, almost.
That's right. Because after, say, 6:30... It was, there was no light apart from the stars.
But I remember it stopped about an hour or more, you hear.
That's right.
Didn't it?
Yes. Quite a long time.
True.
if you could elaborate on this question of distance as to how you calculate it.
Yeah. Any mathematician. Otherwise, I'll keep quiet. because this is my problem. I was aware that the important thing, one of the important things for me, is to try and estimate the size of the craft. So I had to assume one or two things. Most importantly, I had to assume that the figures were of, say, average size. Now, the average size of a Papuan would be about 5'7", 5'8", as a normal man. And so the next day, I got one of my average-sized school pupils and marched him across the playing field until he became the size of the things on the craft. And I did this with measurement of my hand. Now, whether this is the right way to go about it or not, whether elevation makes any difference or not, I wouldn't know, but that doesn't matter. This is what I had to do. And once we got him there, then my hand span, which was roughly about 5 inches, I had to correct that. At one stage, I said 8 inches. And then I realized that, in fact, when I was not conscious of having my hand up for a span, that in fact it was a lot less. And so I had to then readjust from 8 to 5 inches. And so then we got out across, and I measured across one of the school buildings. And told them then to get their little foot rule or yard rule or something and measure the distance. And we got around, what was it, 30 feet, 33 feet,
yes.
Something like that.
Yes. This is the diameter of the craft.
This was, I wouldn't say diameter, it was the length.
The length.
The length of, yes. As we saw it. Yes.
What shape was it?
Pardon?
What shape was it?
We assumed it was disc. It was a round thing, cylinder, that's right.
Circular.
Yes, it had depth, yes.
And lead. It had
what I described in my report as a superstructure, which seemed to be the, rather like the top of a boat deck, you know, what do I call it?
Did you have anything coming up above that?
No. Oh, well, yes, there was a deck structure. There were two parts on it. What I call the body of the craft.
Yes.
And then there was what I interpreted as a superstructure on top of that.
What shape was that?
It was reminded us, because we were right on the coast, and it reminded us of the superstructure of on the deck of a craft.
Well, humanoids on that?
Yes, they were winged.
Not
on top of it, but as though they were behind it. In fact, we could see no legs. We could we assumed that that was from waist upwards. Is what you see?
Were they near there, or was this
yes,
kind of
it seemed as though
cover
over? We couldn't identify any cover over it. I don't think we even had a camera, but we certainly had no film. We had no binoculars. Nothing like this. I mean, we weren't expecting it to say.
And the distance again?
It didn't say. At one stage, I thought 300-400 feet, something like that, at the nearest point.
The furthest,
you mean when it was stationary. The cloud cover I estimated by the mountain was about 2,000 feet, and it was under the cloud cover.
So it could have been between a quarter and 3 miles away.
I guess so. You see, I'm only judging on the nearest point by what I assumed was the size of the...
on the nearest, not the first.
Your
observations are based on the nearest, not the first.
And my observations of the dimension of the craft were, yes.
And all these figures mean that this is the nearest. 300 feet away we're talking about. Not talking about 2 miles away. You couldn't see that.
No, I'm talking between
let's say between 300 feet and 2,000 feet.
2,000 feet.
That's
a
mile and a quarter.
No,
that's
not. 72 feet. No, that's yards. About this kind of thing. And I suggest that there are many suggestions which I made and which I made virtually no comment about. There are only suggestions that passed through my mind. And one of them was this kind of thing, perhaps me as an authoritative figure, my reactions would then have been passed on to the natives, who were much less sophisticated than I was. And because I had an objective approach to it, so did they. Now, had I had any other approach, other kind of approach towards it, I believe they would have too.
Father Gilbert, have you seen in the review anywhere else any photographs of the late number of this kind which seem to you to bear any resemblance to that which you saw?
Oh, yes, I have, yes. I can't label them for you, but yes, I have. Not in toto, but certain aspects of other sightings are reasonably close to what I have seen. Yes.
You see, I examine the photographs which are submitted to me, and inevitably they're nearly always technically bad. I'm an optimist by nature and a pessimist by experience, but I'm not cynic. And I examine everything on its merits. And over a period of several years of examining many photographs, quite a number of which are obviously fake, but in the things which are not, and they're always technically bad, but there are certain resemblances between photographs taken at enormously disparate points. And they have the same kind of structure. I don't look for a technically perfect photograph. But when you have enough bad photographs,
yes,
which can be related together as obviously bad photographs of similar phenomena, this is progress of a very minuscule level,
yes,
but it is progress. And this is as much as one can hope for. And therefore, I was very interested to know if you'd seen any photographs which have been published in a review which in particular seem to be bad photographs of the sort of phenomena which you saw.
I can't label any of these either off my hand, my own mind, but there are some photographs. Sometimes I've passed remarks to Peter about this in the past, I myself would say seem to be in some of the written accounts sometimes incredible, sometimes unbelievable, that I could not accept. But of course this is my opinion, because that if I have seen one kind, then this is not to say that, but some of the accounts do seem even to me most remarkable, sometimes to me unbelievable. There's more than one craft which I saw. This also goes into the report. At one stage, I think there were eight. That's the figure that I just comes to mind, but I think it was, wasn't it? Certainly there was an eight,
yes,
at one stage. Eight in the sky at one time.
In group?
Yes. Well, spread over the sky.
Yes, yes.
No. But there was one craft which I drew and described, which was unlike this major craft which I began talking about, the mother ship or the mother craft to get with. It in itself seemed to be just a cylinder, but from our distance about a quarter of an inch thick.
A cylinder?
A disc, I'm sorry. A disc,
yeah,
about a quarter of an inch thick from where we were, and that had little light spots on it, rectangular light spots, which I suppose were some kind of porthole.
Could you please give us some indication of the relationship in time of what you're speaking about now with the initial sighting?
Oh, this was all over 2 days, two nights.
I see.
In 2 nights.
How was that?
There were two long sightings which were described in the report. Now, virtually, these are the only ones that I could identify.
How long?
For how long? One was 2 hours. Well, it was longer than that, I think. wasn't it? Can you remember the figures?
But it was considerable time. There was one stage, I think, when it was very, very long, yes. It went over 10 p.m.
Yes.
From about 5:45
to
after 10.
What's that objective of having the dark fact that you were understanding in the system? Would you call it a natural or a possibly supernatural manifestation?
Not supernatural, as I thought. No, that's my impression.
Just enlarging on that, Bill,
would you say there were machines manned by people going about some sort of operation?
This is exactly as it seems.
Can I ask you about your quarter of an inch? Was it a quarter of an inch there, or a quarter of an inch at arm's length? I mean...
A quarter of an inch there. There.
A quarter of an inch there is two of the same, isn't it?
Mm. But this was quite a minute sort of thing.
Yes, I see,
but
it's
always difficult.
I mean, it's just very
weird. Yes. It just seemed out there a disc which was about a quarter inch thick.
But out there,
it
was only about
quite a short distance. That's a quarter inch at arm's length, isn't it? You mean a quarter inch at arm's length?
No, a quarter inch as I saw it.
Because a quarter inch at 100 yards you can't see. Surely.
It seemed to be, whatever the distance, whether it was 1 yard or 1 mile, I don't know, but it was a disc which, to my eyes, was about a quarter of an inch thick.
That's all I know.
You see, I'm not scientific. I'm not one of these fellows who knows how to measure or what to do with measurements once you've got them in the sky. You see, if I saw a plane, I only know I can only judge the distance of a plane because I've seen one on the ground of that same model. But if you give a new kind of plane, I'm at a loss as to how big the plane is. Solids, but there was no indication of clothing.
No colour.
No colour.
More silhouette.
Silhouette.
Bill, can you be absolutely sure that there weren't just people on the deck of a ship offshore?
No, I can't. I can't be sure about anything. All I can be sure about is the image that I have in my mind of what I saw. And this had me worried. This is the reason for my getting several of the more educated among the witnesses to get into corners of the room and say, now, draw what you saw. And three or four of those drawings are incorporated in the report, and if you see them, that there are significant similarities.
That is say the object.
That's as much as you could possibly hope. Yeah.
That's right.
Because people have entirely different ratios of graphic interpretation.
You'll notice, one of them has in fact viewed it from above, which of course was impossible. But it's what he imagined it was.
Yeah, I was going to say, Bill, didn't you say that the thing took off after the sighting, which a ship couldn't possibly have done?
So does that exclude the possibility of it being a ship?
In those days, there were all kinds of rumours about machines, you know, the atomic age and all that, and hovercraft. I think it was just in the beginning of the age of the hovercraft, and this could have been a hovercraft to us, which is some kind, you know, and particularly me as not being more than man of the humanities rather than the sciences. I was not even prepared at the beginning to really believe that they were not something which was quite from the earth.
In those days, you were lucky if they'd cast their eye between Portsmouth and the Isle of Wight. There's no doubt.
Yeah. But for me, you see, and particularly being a bit cut off from the world, there, that it, in fact, did coincide with some of the drawings that one's seen. But apart from the lake, it's not unlike a hovercraft.
Oh,
yes.
No.
One thing that puzzles me is when we give a clear answer to this. If I'm right, you saw this craft and people appeared to be working on it.
Yes.
Then a day passed.
Yes.
And during which nothing was there.
That's right.
And then you saw this and other craft again.
Yes.
Now, it's reasonable to assume that they might be working on something and down the road with the purpose of Of course, you can wonder why, after an interval in which presumably they've gone away, they should then come back.
Yes, I guess the second night I wondered. And for quite some time afterwards, of course, my eyes were rarely off the stars at night, wondering whether I'd ever see such a thing again.
This, of course, did not go into report because this is subjectiveness rather than the objective report that was meant to be. But, yes, I guess I did, in retrospect.
It seems again you're a qualified word of Alan Hynek and Peters, I should think.
The draft you mentioned, this platter on the corrugated iron roof, I suppose, guessing, and I'm only guessing, some such effect could be obtained by a downward draft of considerable force. Was that your impression as to what it might have been?
No.
It was not physically
anyway, no.
No, so it wasn't the sort of thing you might get with a
It was rather like, let's say, a 6-inch bolt being dropped from, say, 20 or 30 feet.
You felt no draft at the time?
No.
You feel that Dennis has had the experience of that phenomenon of the earth, really?
Yes.
We had to pass South Africa. No, we
have to
be thinking of the way you could lose the world. And it ties up, of course, with the polar
phenomenon.
I believe that we are going to show, I believe we can already show, that the connection between some of these entities they are, there's a definite, that polygon is identical. Some of this picture may be identical with what we call the polygast phenomenon.
Yeah, but Bill's sighting doesn't sound like a polygast.
No, the thing's dropping.
Except that there was no dent, nothing to visible there.
But
to my
why I suppose it leads this way is because this is not the first time fighting, but it's associated with construction.
No, we were men in the problem. Now, you were terribly communicated by session and talk. Did you think that there was a reluctance on their part to communicate back with you, or they did it in some... because you insisted on them answering it as well. What was your feeling?
We felt, coming to the subject of it, we felt that they were responding.
And that they deliberately wished to answer your
This was our interpretation. But of course, it may not have had any, again, may not have any earlier, but this is as we felt.
Yes.
Our response was
yours was the light.
That's right. Their response was hopper.